Three, two, one. Hi, this is Chuck Anders, and I'll be your host for the rest of the hour. The background is a wonderful man, Baxter Black, the cowboy humorist and poet. And I want to say that we're delighted to have him on the show today. He entertained last night, a Saturday night here in South Dakota, hundreds of people at
possibly thousands of people.
And it really was, Baxter. It was a packed ballroom. We couldn't get another person in there. It was at the Crossroads Convention Center in Huron. And I want to thank you very much, sir, for being on the show.
Well, I would not be in Huron if it were not for KOKK. They produced this deal and had a lot of great sponsors came, and we had a good crowd show up last night. And maybe there weren't thousands of people, but they sounded like thousands of people, didn't they?
They sounded like tens of thousands
of people. Tens of thousands of people, that's right.
I want to just tell the people right now that Baxter was really gracious to us to give us the time for the interview. Right now, it's a Sunday afternoon. It's just a little bit of time, and he's going to have to fly out of Huron. He invited me up to this beautiful, spacious room. I understand they reserve this for either the governor or the president.
That's right, and they didn't show up. So they gave me... I'm in the suite here at the Crossroads. And the truth is, I'm on the road quite a bit, and I do this entertaining. And I get to stay in several suites, but I'm always by myself. I mean, look at that bed in there. There's enough. You should have come and spent the night with me, Chuck. I think there was room for about half those people that were here last night.
Now you're telling us we could have had 200-300 people up here.
Yes, we could have. Matter of fact, they should be here now. But it is a nice suite, but it seems ostentatious for one fellow who... You know, I try to mess it up. I've been stirring the pillows up, drag the chairs around. And, anyway.
We have to get you out of the airport at 2 o'clock, so that you'll be flying out of Huron at 2:50. And I want to mention to the people right now that this is going to be fun for me, because I'm just going to keep this tape recorder going. When we check out of the Hotel Baxter, when we're on our way driving through Huron, I'm going to just have this tape recorder going. And I'm going to say to people, hey, here's Baxter Black, and they're going to hopefully say, wow.
You know what it'll probably be? Somebody come up and say, are you Chuck Anderson? You say, yes, here's a subpoena.
You know, a lot of people, until about halfway through the show last night, when you did your poetry, truly didn't recognize the real artist and entertainer that you are. As you started to read the poetry, a lady next to me says, I've seen him on Johnny Carson. And, of course, you have been a regular with Johnny Carson over the years. He greatly appreciated the cowboy poets. And as we're visiting for the rest of the show, I hope that people remember those years and really how great that you were. Johnny's from Norfolk, Nebraska, and probably, and they're picking us up right now as we speak.
Really?
Baxter.
Yes. In Norfolk, huh? Out at the sale barn, they're probably listening to you Saturday morning. I had was lucky, you know, people like me don't get on the Johnny Carson show because it's a... It's a business, you know, and businesses like that run with agents and the whole. And so when people like, I tell people, when people like me, the cowboy poets, the 100-year-old woman or the talking dog get on Johnny Carson, you know we've fallen between the cracks, because they got to come find you, because we don't have anybody out there representing us to, which is how that business works. Every comedian's got an agent. The agent's objective is to get on Johnny Carson. So,
what's it like, Baxter, working with a big show, NBC?
It's scary for me.
I mean, what were your thoughts the first time that you appeared on the Johnny Carson show?
Well, he had actually called. I made a serious mistake. I've been doing this for about 10 years, or I guess since 82. And I have had moved to Denver, or Brighton, near Denver. And this would have been in the fall of 83 or the spring of 84, and they called up. And I don't have a television. So
You don't have a television?
I preface it by saying this so you appreciate. It's not that I haven't in my life and haven't watched Johnny Carson show. Of course I have. But for the last several years, we've not had one. And so I get a call one day, and it's in the afternoon, and I'm going out to do something, and I answer the phone, and the lady says, "This is the Tonight Show, and somebody gave us your name." And I had just been on two local talk shows in Denver, and they said, "We'd like to consider you about coming and being a guest." And I said, "Well, ma'am, I'd be glad to, you know, but I'm awfully busy right now. I've got lots of programs lined up, and if you'll just, you know, give me your address or something, or let me know.
Have Johnny call later.
Yeah, let my secretary call up. Maybe we can work something out, but we'll have to work it in between the pay and jobs." You know, I was being practical. Yeah, because I thought it was one of the talk shows in Denver that had called. She said, "Well, can you send us something?" And I said, "Well, I guess so. I can send you a tape or something." I had one tape. This was a year ago. So I said, "Give me your address." And I'm writing down the Tonight Show, and I don't think anything about that. And get done. It says, "Burbank, California." My pen stopped on ink. I said, "Burbank, California? Is this the Johnny Carson Show?" She said, "Yes, and you're not going to be on it."
Oh.
And she was right. I got the letter they sent back. They said, "Your stuff's too cowy." And I called them back. I said, "I can be generic." And they said, "No." And I badgered these people for 3 or 4 years, and they would not have me on. And the cowboy poetry deal came. And I'm probably the most successful of the cowboy poets, at least financially. Doesn't mean I'm the best, by the way, but so the cowboy poetry people take pretty good care of me. And so they, when Johnny Carson liked the cowboy poets, they recommended me. They wouldn't have nothing to do with me because they'd already been in touch with me. So for 2 years, I mean, they wouldn't give me the time of day. So the third year after the cowboy poets had been on, they called. And the lady said, I was humbled, truly. They said, "We're thinking about having you on. Would that be all right with you?" And I already knew these people by then, see. I said, "I would be pleased to be on." And that once they had me on, I was on for several years. So
you sat right next to the master of NBC. When you walk out onto that stage, there has just got to be something that goes through your heart that...
Fear.
Fear.
Oh, man. You talk about scared. Just, I do 100 programs a year. You know, I spoke to the FFA convention in Kansas City this year. 28,000 people in the Coliseum. "Hi, kids. How are you?" But going out on the Johnny Carson Show was just, in my case, I'm a nervous wreck. And I was on 6 times. And every time, I was a nervous wreck. So
never got over it.
Never got over it.
Well, you know, Johnny Carson always said that if you aren't nervous when you come out, you must be dead, because he said he gets nervous every night before he'd go out. And he was on for a long time.
Yeah.
He said he was nervous every night before the show started.
Maybe it has to do with the insecurity of comedians or something. I don't know. But he was awfully good. You and I were visiting before we started taping about being interviewed. And I tell people that Johnny Carson was good and a good host from my point of view, because I have been interviewed by some, you know, and I won't even tell you the national TV.
That's okay. We won't tell about, okay, sir.
No, well, it doesn't make any difference because you wouldn't know them anyway. But they were big-time people in Los Angeles. And it was but it was embarrassing for me. I liked when you're sitting looking me right in the eye. Here you are. You're listening to what I'm saying. And I make people laugh. And when you make people laugh, you have to have a reaction. You know, in my case, anyway. It's not like talking. It's not like being a disc jockey, you know, where you're just, you never know if it's funny because you're not getting any feedback. But when you do what I do, or you have a show like Johnny Carson where you have an audience, but if the person I'm talking to, and I have actually had this happen, I've had TV anchors or talk show hosts reading questions off the teleprompter or off the cue cards over my shoulder, like, and it sort of goes like this. Well, it is good to see you. I shouldn't say it. They're really quite smooth. Really good to see you. I understand you're a cowboy poet. You know, but they don't know it. They're just reading this stuff. And would you tell us a little poem about, you know, whatever they've set up? I start to tell this poem. The camera goes off of them. They start turning around like this. They're talking to some guy over here, you know, jotting this down. They don't, you know, and here I am telling this to nobody. I mean, and it's very difficult. Now, Johnny Carson, I remember the very first time I was on there, I did a poem called The Vegetarian's Nightmare. And it's a lunatic thing. And it's not, if you just read it, you would think, well, I'm not sure this is funny, because it's sort of a satire. But when you perform it, you become the mad conductor, you know, and it's a lot of the, well, here's a little taste of it. It's
let me move all the equipment away here. I saw you working last night.
This has to do with people thinking that, but it's a satire on animal rights, except the guy finds out that plants feel pain. Okay. Ladies and diners, I make you a shameful, degrading confession, a deed of disgrace, in the name of good taste. Though I did it, I meant no aggression. I had planted a garden last April and lovingly sang it a ballad. But later in June, beneath a full moon, forgive me, I wanted a salad. So I slipped out and fondled a carrot, caressing its feathery top. With the force of a brute, I tore out the root and whimpered and came with a pop. And then laying my hand on a radish, I jerked and it left a small crater. Then with the blade of my true value spade, I exhumed a slumbering tater. It goes on and on and on.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with our great friend Baxter Black. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go away. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson.
And they're off.
Three, two, one. I'm back with Baxter Black. He is being his
own. We've got a trained seal in this room, don't we?
We're kind of being our own audience right now. We're in a beautiful hotel suite at the Huron Convention Center, the Crossroads.
And actually, it belongs to a guy who checked out about 9 this morning. I was in the room across the hall, but I was watching him all. And
you mean you really didn't own this room? When I talked to you on the phone, you just made this room number up and came over and took it over?
Yes. Well, I mean, these are not my cigarette butts.
Or your brassiere.
That pair of stockings are not mine.
That was a wonderful poem that you gave us for the first segment, Baxter, and it's so much fun to have you. I want to remind everyone that we're listening to the guest, Baxter Black, a humorous in cowboy poetry, and we were just talking about Johnny Carson. Then we went on to other people that have interviewed you.
And he's an interviewer. And so I'm up there doing this poem that I just sort of gave you a taste of, which requires getting into it. I mean, it was from my point of view, it was a chancy one to do, because if it doesn't work, it just goes. And I look over there a couple times, and the crowd is reacting, thank goodness. But Johnny Carson is looking at me just the same way you are at this moment. He was really paying attention, and you don't know how comforting that was. And when it worked, he knew that it worked, and I knew that it worked, and I knew it was a success. And I actually got invited for his next to the last week, but they had the Los Angeles riots, so they canceled the whole week, so they had stars backed up. But the guy that called said, Johnny wants to have you on one more time. And I'd just been on in January. He said he wants to have you on one more time.
It's a real compliment,
yeah,
Baxter.
I thought so, too. He was awfully nice to me. And I consider it kind of a... it really had not a whole lot to do with my business, in all fairness, because I do agricultural banquets. And it's nice that the lady last night in the middle of my show realized that I was a guy on Johnny Carson, but that isn't why she came.
That's right.
She reads my column somewhere, or hears my little radio program, and, you know, I'm an agricultural person. So what the Johnny Carson show, for instance, does for my business, you know, it lends a little credibility to you as an entertainer. But in fact, these people, most of them that come to my shows, like my stuff anyway, because it's farm humor or cowboy stuff. And so, but it was, and I get asked a lot, well, hasn't Jay called you back? Well, yes, we've
That's just what I was going to ask.
Well, we have talked to him. I was actually on with him once. But if they don't, it's the same deal. I mean, we've talked to him 3 or 4 times. Yes, we'd like to have you on. We'd like to have you on. That's all I can do. You know, I don't have somebody to call them and badger them on a regular basis. So maybe out of the clear blue they will. I don't know that. But I don't know what else to do. When the Johnny Carson show said they would like to have you on, then they called. So I don't know. It would be nice to be on with Jay Leno. But I can tell you this, and probably Jay Leno could tell you the same thing, and that is that to have been associated with Johnny Carson was a good thing. It was a great thing.
Have you ever had a chance to work with David Letterman yet down the line?
Well, we actually had been in touch with him while I was on with Johnny Carson, because they were on the same network. And they called, and we sent him some stuff. But I don't know. Now maybe I would, but at that time, I might have been a little reluctant. We turned down some others, you know, just because.
I think you and David Letterman would be a scream together. He's a natural comedian, and your wit is just extraordinary. You pick up on things just like that. So let's mention to everybody in the 4 states that we're reaching right now, Baxter.
Yeah.
Everybody write or call David Letterman and say they want Baxter Black on the show.
Yeah, well, it might work. Sure. Well, I would be glad to be on there.
Two of us in a room trying to sound like 1,000 people.
I think we're doing pretty well.
Going back into radio, of course.
You want another beer?
Set them up around.
Okay, all right. Good job.
You are really a star on radio because you have that ability to be able to paint pictures with words. And anyone that has listened to you now for the last 10, 15 minutes that we've been on, they can just see you sitting here comfortably in this chair, visiting with them. And
no, but they don't realize that I'm actually stark naked and I have a towel over my waist just out of modesty here, Chuck. I just got out of the shower, and people who don't know me don't realize that I have a mohawk haircut.
With blue paint.
Yeah, and this earring here, you know, that's kind of an
in the eyebrow.
Yeah. And I've got my dog Sparky. Come here. Shut up, Sparky. Sit down.
I don't think they allow dogs in the hotel here.
Well, actually, they didn't realize it was dogs. You didn't either, because he is disguised as a marmoset. Or is that a marmot? Yes, maybe it's a marmot.
Tell us about how you got into radio. This had to be a wonderful break for you. Where did you first start?
Well, you've been in the radio business, right?
A couple of years.
I happen to know that the radio business is not necessarily the most stable occupation. So I'm not going to ask personally, Chuck, how many outfits have let you go? Because that would. But I worked for cattle companies as a vet, and worked for 3 of them, and got actually let go from 2 of them. So they trade hands, you know, and they don't always keep the same people. It's the same old deal. But anyway, I've always been a, whatever you call me now, I haven't really changed any.
Cowboy humorous and poet.
And they didn't pay me for it, you know.
Or poultry guy.
Poultrygeist, yes. Cowboy poultry. So, and I was always the guy that went, when I showed up at the ranch or the feedlot, I had the latest joke, and I wrote songs forever. You're a musician, I know, and
yes.
I had a band myself in the old days.
Well, you did.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about the band after we figure out how you got into radio.
Yeah, well, I started somehow telling these stories to my friends and my cowboys, and And then I started telling stories about them. And then I started making them into poems. And as the years went by, and the last job that I got let go from in 1982, I was doing a little of this on the side. But in all fairness, in every community, everybody has a function. When there's a community project going on, and my function, you know, it's like, I said, well, gosh, we got to put the bleachers in. How are we going to move them? Well, hell, he's got a rental unit. We'll get Bill to do it because he's got the forklift, and he does it every year anyway. It's what I call the potato salad theory. One lady told me one time, her mother told her, never learn to make potato salad. And she said, why? Because she said, if you do, you will develop a reputation. And from there on out, for the rest of your life, you will be making the potato salad. Someone will say, well, we're going to have a picnic. Jim, you can bring the burgers because you're working at IGA. And can you get some chips down there, too? And maybe you could make the tea. And well, who will make the potato salad? Oh, she'll make the potato salad. She always makes the potato salad. And I was the guy that, just like you probably, they said, well, who are we going to get to be the MC? Oh, well, Baxter can do it. He does it. He's not very good, but we can. At least he won't embarrass us. Right?
Yes, sir.
So in every community, and so you don't just suddenly become somebody who's good at something. I get a lot of this cowboy poetry deal is wonderful, and there's a lot of good cowboy poets. But most of us are, it's a hobby. But every now and then I run into a fellow or a lady who says, well, I've got my first book out, and I'd like to go perform. I'm ready to do it. How much should I charge? And I tell them, do 1,000 free, and then they'll come to you. And that's the truth. You don't just suddenly become an accomplished performer or an accomplished anything without putting your time in.
So it wasn't just overnight that you became a national radio celebrity.
I bored people stupid. I can remember them numbing, falling off their... I emceed so many cowbell banquets and Burt Parks and all the Rodeo Queen deals. I did the pre-rodeo announcing, the little britches, you know, all those things for years.
Free?
Free. Of course free. What are they going to pay me? And then I got to work for this last company, and it was a company that was a Cooper's, good company, sold animal health products. And I was there, one of their technical vets. So I did a lot of programs educational programs for their producers and vets and stuff like that. And it was always more humorous than it was educational. So I was often invited, well, can you stay for the banquet tonight? You know, a county cattleman's, and I was giving a little educational program that afternoon. Get up and say a few words at the banquet. So I'd get up and say a few words, and the next thing, after 2 years, we were in demand. I mean, it was great. And I actually hired a secretary to help keep this straight. And when this company let me go, we had deals lined up for free, of course. So we had to call them and say, can you pay us a little something? And then we started charging for it. And this was in the fall of 82. And it has never stopped. We don't use a booking agent or anything like that. We don't have to. We're lucky we don't have to solicit.
But to get on radio like you're on KOKK every... And last night you had to ask the people, and there was that death silence of when you come on KOKK.
Well, it's a new program, Baxter Black on Monday, 9:15.
In the morning.
Yeah, K-O-K-K. But it's once a week, and once a week a program gets lost. So we're hoping to get it established.
Well, this takes a lot of organization. I can sure appreciate that. I mean, you had to sit down with some producers and people who knew the industry and marketing. There's a lot of hard work to that.
That's right. You ain't woofing, and I got good help. And we make our radio programs and send them. We're now on 148 stations around the country. Started in June.
What was the first station? Do you remember the first one that picked you up?
Yes, I do. The Great Plains Network, Wichita, Springfield, Omaha, WOW in Omaha.
Wow.
Yeah.
Johnny Carson was with...
What was he with? In Norfolk?
In Omaha.
K-O-K-K? He's,
yes, K-O-K-K. Johnny Carson really started his radio career in Omaha, Nebraska. And if we're picked up in Nebraska, I'm probably going to be wrong. I really think it was W-O-W.
Well, they were the big farm station. And still are, of course. So maybe Johnny was doing farm jokes.
Who was the last station that just picked you up? Can you, have they told you around the country?
Let me think a minute. Yes. Oh, gosh. Oh, that was the newspaper column. Hold on. Let me ask me that.
I'll tell you what.
Break.
Let's take a break. We're with Baxter Black.
Great.
We're having a lot of fun. Stay with us. We're going to be with you for the rest of the hour. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. Three, two, one. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. Our guest for this hour's show is and has been Baxter Black.
Yes,
Cowboy
humorist. I've been all my life, you know. Not a stage name. I get asked if that's a stage name.
Is that a stage name?
See, people ask me that all the time. No, it isn't.
I figured it was probably for real because you're a very sincere type of a guy.
Yeah, and I was surprised the first time someone said, is that your real name? Because it never occurred to me that it wouldn't be.
You know, we're sitting in this room that you broke into, what, this morning, so that you could give me a room number?
Well, actually, I didn't break into it. I just...
The door, they were making the bed.
Yes, that's right, you see.
Actually, what, you slept out in your car last night? Because they didn't pay you enough to get in.
You were talking about going to Minnesota and the guy not being ready for your band. And
yes.
I have not actually had that experience, but I can't tell you how many different places I've changed clothes. I bring a banquet shirt, and this is ostentatious. And we got here last night, and it was nice. And I came up here, but it is not always this way. Not that I mind either, by the way, but I've changed in the car. I mean, I can remember changing.
It's hard to do with the pants.
Changing in the car in the parking lot of City Park in Bureau County, Illinois, so I could go to the county cattleman's that night. I've changed in the basement of Catholic Church in Chester, Montana. Just the oddest places. Behind these rodeos, I change behind cars sometimes. So, you know, if you're doing the county fair.
We were talking about the disc jockey that is kind of a part-time interviewer at the station because there's only he and the janitor and the engineer that comes in once a year that keeps them on. So you have a lot of guys that they try real hard, but they just don't seem to have their heart in the interview, or they aren't experienced enough, or they're too experienced, and they've been bored for about 25 years.
I think it's the latter that I'm talking about. The average small-town radio person, by the way, they're usually pretty good. And what they lack maybe in knowing what questions to ask, at least they make up for in interest. You know, they're paying attention.
And they laugh at your jokes. And try to...
Well, they react. I do deals on the telephone, too, and I get deals. This is an example of young people who simply don't know what to do, and they want to call up, and they're doing a book report, or they're having to write a story about a poet, and they've chosen me, or whatever. And so they call up, and I say, okay, well, just I have to write a report. I say, yeah, so what? Well, what do I put down? I said, well, the first thing you do is you hang up the phone and you sit down and you write down about 8 or 10 questions that you think might be useful. And then you call me back. And I'm a little hard on them, especially if they're in college.
Oh, these are grown-ups.
Well, high school and college.
You're from Denver, and I suspect that's got to be one of the first questions that an interviewer probably asks. And I've mentioned that I've been interviewed myself over the years, and it is funny when you get a hold of a guy that he just isn't into the interview. And we'll take that role. Just take that role. I'm the interviewer.
Let me interview you.
I'm the interviewer.
I'm interviewing you.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Chuck Anderson here with us. Chuck has a wonderful history here in the northern central part of... I don't want to limit Chuck to South Dakota. Chuck has... The teleprompter's not working. Can you get that? Chuck has a great history here in the Minnesota, South Dakota area up here in the Great Piney Woods. Chuck used to be on I can't read that, Bill. What does that say? Oh, Chuck used to be on a big station in Minneapolis, and I understand, Chuck, is it true you started in WOW in Omaha?
Yes, sir.
Oh, excuse me. You used to do a, what does that say, a corn show? A corn show? What is a corn show, Chuck?
Well, that's a show where we enjoy having a lot of humor in there, and we're talking about it.
Well, that's real good, Chuck. It's nice you could be with us, you know. Yes, well, we've run out of time.
Let me throw one that really did happen to me.
Okay, all right.
You're going to enjoy this. Okay, I'd like to have on the show Baxter Black. Baxter is kind of coming up. We guess, writes some poetry or something like that. He claims to be a cowboy. Where are you from, Baxter?
I'm actually from New York City.
Oh. The weather has been really nice. By the way, where are you from?
Colorado.
Oh, New York City, excuse me.
We understand that you've been in poultry or something, and we were wondering where you grew up. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from Colorado, Chuck.
The guy will go on like that 6 different times and ask you where you're from.
This sounds like Bob and Ray. You know them?
Yes, sir. I love them. Yeah. I love them. And their kids are carrying on the tradition right now. You mentioned you had a band.
Wait. I had a guy. Me and 2 rodeo clowns in Saskatchewan. This is in Regina. And we were on this early morning radio program, a talk show. And the guy looked like Alistair McLean, and he had this beautiful stuffed chair. And these 2 rodeo clowns and I, and we had, this was in my youth, I admit, and we had a severe party the night before. And we're all 3 sitting, the 2 clowns are sitting on a couch, and I'm sitting right here. And the 3 of us are being interviewed because I'm part of the rodeo entertainment. And the guys...
That's what the contract says anyway.
Yes, that's right. And the interviewer never even speaks to us until the camera comes on. I mean, he's sitting there and he's getting his face made up, you know, and I've got a thunderous hangover. And these clowns, and so he doesn't know that I'm not a rodeo clown or that they aren't. He don't have any idea. So he turned to me and he said, the show came on. We've got a cowboy, and he had a sort of a Canadian English accent. A cowboy poet and rodeo clowns. Oh, I'm not sure what they do, but we'll get into it. It's going to be really interesting. And he turned to me and he said, "Your name is what is your name?" And I told him. And he said, "Are there any special requirements to being a rodeo clown?" And I said, "Well, yes. Partial lobotomy would be a good start." He never cracked a smile. He never said a word. He turned to the next guy and he said, "And do you agree with that?"
He was obviously captured by every word. He was hanging right in there.
That's right. He never understood. I mean, he was just going through the motions.
I learned back working in Armed Forces Radio during just after the Korean War. And we had some great guys from Detroit. We had Stan the Man, who was fabulous, and what a mentor he was. And even though I was just the poorest talent in the whole Far East, I was surrounded by all these great guys.
Yeah. Well, what did you do exactly? Because I didn't see Good Morning America, but I will go see it.
Really? Well, Robin Williams portrays a kind of a typical disc jockey who is assigned to Armed Forces Radio. And this is during the Vietnam War, but we've had Armed Forces Radio ever since World War II.
You were on in Korea.
I was on in Korea.
Now, you were in Korea.
In Korea.
Okay, with the Marines.
With the Marines, okay. Right. And it was just a hilarious type of a movie. Mostly, Robin Williams is wrapped up. He has some friends that are in a unit that's gone into combat, and he's been trying to figure out what happened to him. Well, it gets kind of serious. The movie kind of loses that humor at that time, and eventually he finds out what happened. And he wants to give the news story. It's a great news story.
Yeah.
So he writes it up. He gives it to the board of censors who are sitting almost on top of the microphone.
Yeah.
And he had nothing left of the news story.
Yeah.
And that's the movie turns at this point, and Robin Williams then becomes very sad. and realizes that everything that he had tried to do for his country and for the people in Vietnam wasn't working because of this thing called freedom of speech that we cherish so much
oh,
here.
Great. What a horrible movie.
But once you're at Armed Forces Radio, you're under military command and complete censorship. Yeah. Robin Williams, all through the movie, he just couldn't understand that.
Well, gosh, I thought it was going to be a little more uplifting than that. But you, is it like that? I mean, it had to be sad.
It was. We had, I've told the story before, but I'll just abbreviate. I know it. We had a heroic situation, Baxter. Our base was actually for propeller-driven fighter planes, never meant to land a jet, let alone one of these huge mats, the triple-decker Air Force planes that carry hundreds of soldiers. We had a flight that was coming from Hawaii to Seoul, Korea. It was to be a relief. And they had a fuel leak somewhere over Okinawa, and they were running out of gasoline. And they had no landing strip in all of Korea except for this little tiny strip that we had in K3 Korea. Well, we found out at the radio station that this plane was coming in, close to 300 troops that they could get aboard these. Yeah. They had no time to even circle. The pilot said that they were completely out of gasoline. And he says, we're coming in, and we know the strip isn't long enough. We need to know the very end of the runway that we can set down on, because we don't think we'll have enough gas to even reverse the props. So they went around, and this was really risky if you're in the wash of one of these huge planes, or it lands on top of you. It's very serious.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So they got some guys who used to be aboard naval ships and knew the semaphore, and they placed them at the very end. We're going to land this thing like an aircraft carrier.
Them, yeah,
it's going to be. We are their aircraft carrier.
Oh, they are.
And these guys brought them down. It was heroic. They landed because this strip was covered by ocean. All the way around it was ocean and cliffs that went off. So the guy cleared the cliff, came down probably the first 10 feet of the runway.
Wow.
Immediately hit the brakes, immediately revved up the props, and there was a heroic action by United States Marines that anyone in this country would have been proud of. By the time that they landed, they were and came to a stop, the nose wheel was 1 foot from going over this cliff back into the ocean.
Oh, God.
The nose actually stuck way out over the ocean. It was heroic. I was there with recording equipment. I interviewed these wonderful pilots that came off. The stories of the guys that came off, Baxter, was fabulous.
Yeah.
They said, these guys we owe our life to. They are a tribute to the United States military. I had a story that was just beautiful, Baxter.
Did they censor it?
All they allowed me to say was a United States Air Force plane paid a surprise visit to K3 Korea. End of story.
Oh, no. Really?
Wasn't that marvelous of the heroism that saved the hundreds of lives?
But they would have made it sound like they were incompetent in their fuel allocations and machinery.
Afraid we were talk about troop, how many was aboard the troop, and K3 wasn't really there, see.
Yeah.
Tell us, now, on radio, you're at 160 stations across the United States.
Yeah.
You must get a lot of fan mail.
I do, as a matter of fact, and it's kind of nice. We're in, let me see if I can think of it, but Merced, California, for instance, and Wilcox, Arizona, and Okeechobee, Florida, and Carrollton, Iowa. Or not Iowa, Carrollton, Missouri. That's one of the newest ones we've got, by the way.
Maybe I can ask you one of the funny letters that you've had when we come back.
Okay.
Like always, Baxter, you can tell I really, really enjoyed this show because I'm looking at this clock and I can't believe that our show is almost up. And pretty soon I got to run you out to the airport,
too.
We're going to have you out there at 2 o'clock. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson.
Three, two, one.
We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. Our guest is Baxter Black, cowboy humorist and poet. We just checked Baxter out of the hotel, and right now we're on our way to the airport. We were talking about fan letters, and a lot of times people will get some that, one, are humorous, and some are quite sad.
Well, you're right, and that's part of the deal. I get lots of poetry, and I like it. Everybody has at least one poem inside of them, and so they write it and send it. And then I get the nice letters like, you know, I really like this, my dad, you reminded me of my dad, or whenever your program comes on the air, it's like Christmas or those kind. And there are some really clever ones that are poets. And I also get stories, because they hear them and they say, well, here's a story you can use. And some of them you can. Some of them are good. So I get lots of them, and I'm pretty faithful about answering my mail.
Well, that's the mark of a real star, a person who will answer the fan mail. A lot of them...
You know, I keep telling myself that.
Have you had any that was sad? Sometimes there's some pretty pitiful ones that come in. They talk about how poor their folks are, or their dad just died or something. Do you get any, or have you had any like that?
Yes, I have. One I can remember in particular, and it inspired a poem. I hate to put it that way, but it's true. There's a poem in my new book called Daddy's Ranch. In this, it happened to be in Amarillo, and I was doing a program, and a lady came up, and I said, well, how are you? I mean, just a stranger. It was like we were visiting last night. How are you doing? She said, I tell you, I mean, I don't even know her, bless her heart. And she says, I've just spent the last week at my dad's ranch. He died, and I've been going through the books. And she said, we thought everything was fine. We're having to sell the place just to pay off the bills. I mean, no, gosh. So, yes, it was awful. All right, and anybody who has that book, Croutons on the Cow Pie, Volume 2, look up Daddy's Ranch.
How do you respond to something like that?
Well,
Notice I'm not taking the handicap parking. I was very nice about that.
Good.
Although we're going to have to walk 5 miles now. But how do you respond?
I'll tell you. Everybody has tragedies in their life. And I guess the biggest one in my life was that my father died when I had three brothers, and I was the oldest, and I was 14, and the youngest was 5. So we and my mother survived, like everybody does, somehow. And so I meet people who have had tragedies like that, and I've always been not uncomfortable discussing it. I mean, I can talk to people about dying. I've had my own first personal experience with it. And it doesn't embarrass me to talk to people who are in the hospital and, you know, get cancer and it's not going to cure. I can talk to those people without feeling uncomfortable, because I know what death is like, I think.
It must have been... You're a veterinarian, right? You've been telling everybody you're a vet.
Yes, I am.
And really, you went through college and all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of expense there. How did you come up with the ability to be able to work your way through that?
Well, it cost less in the old days. Nowadays, it is outrageous. I went 3 years to college.
Where at?
New Mexico State. And we happened to live in Las Cruces, where the town was. And when my father died, when I was in high school, he was in the Navy, and so the Navy covered the burial, and nobody expects to die when you're 40 years old, so the insurance we had was minimal. So mother went to work, and I went to work, and we all went to work, but the community passed the hat, and the hat was, I don't know how much money was in it, but it was enough. Was so that the boys could go to college, me and my brothers. And so each, I don't know, all had out of it, but 2,000 or 3,000 maybe. And that helped me when I went to vet school. But I've been working since I was 13. I've had a steady...
What type of work did you do? What were you doing at 13?
I started working in a grocery store in this little town. And
called? That little town was...
Mesilla Park, New Mexico. And... I mean, we're talking after school and all day Saturday, 60 cents an hour. Got up through the One summer, or excuse me, I'd never been out for professional or for high school sports because I was working. And I'd asked my mother if I could quit for that winter because I wanted to go out for wrestling, and she said, well, I guess so. So I didn't work after school that winter. And then that summer I took a job with a sheep research station, and I worked for them for 3 years, and then I went to work for different feedlots while I was going to college. And when I was in Las Cruces, or in Fort Collins, where I went to veterinary school for 4 years, I was an entrepreneur, I guess is what you'd call me.
Yes, sir.
I had a hair cutting business. I had a band. We played...
hair cutting not for people or animals? Yeah. Or
people. I'm a pretty good barber. And I gave a quarter haircut for a dollar. And I had a band, and we played every weekend, and sometimes more often than that. I made belts. I'm a leather carver, and I made hundreds of belts, sold them to people. I'd go back home to Las Cruces and go across the Mexican border and come back with cheap silver buckles and stuff and boots. And
you were an entrepreneur.
And I'd haul them out there, and I'd sell them. I made a deal where I did everybody's laundry in vet school because you had to wear these smocks and coveralls, and they got bloody. And so I had to deal with the local laundry.
Before they say all aboard... for our listeners here in South Dakota.
I guess they're just testing it here, Chuck. Look, they're driving it around.
Maybe it won't work.
Well, it looks, seems to be running. I don't know what they're doing.
You got a poem you could leave us with?
Well, I could give you a little...
Or poultry, as they say.
Yeah. Well, here's one that's pretty new that I kind of like. We've talked about our vehicles, and you brought me over in your 1980 Buick.
Yes.
And I told you I have a 1976 Cadillac and a 79 Ford pickup. And this is a good pickup. You know, it's a three-quarter ton, four-wheel, or not four-wheel drive, but four on the floor. And the tires on the truck are worth more than the truck. I like a pickup that looks like a truck. And not like a tropical fish, or a two-ton poodle with running lights, or a mutant frog on a leash. Give me one tough as a cast-iron skillet with a bumper that's extra large, and a hood that weighs over 85 pounds and looks like the prow on a barge. I like style, but since when should a truck be touted for comfort and ride? Power windows on pickups remind me of jeans with a zipper that zips at the side. They should soak up the dents of everyday life like a boxer losing his teeth. And I like a truck when you lift up the hood, but I guess you can see the ground underneath. Pickups are kind of like welding gloves. Pockmarks are part of the deal. Not pretty, just built to get the job done. Like the dummy behind the wheel. Don't get me wrong, I know beauty is skin deep and ugly is in the eye, but to find out if your truck is my kind of truck, here's a test that you can apply. If you have a small wreck in the parking lot by backing a little too far, your only worry is how big a mess you made of the other guy's car.
Is that a live... experience that happened somewhere down the line?
It's exactly. Anybody's got a pickup that's done it, of course, including me. I was trying to pull out in the street, and it was one of those deals where the parking lot coming out of Safeway went up and then went down. There was a hump, so you went down into a curb. So if you're over that hump in the pickup, the tail end of your pickup's sticking up. So you can't see anything. But this guy pulls up behind me. I think it was a Trans Am sort of car, and he just pulled right up behind me, and I couldn't see him in the rear view mirror. I couldn't see him looking back over the pickup because the pickup was jacked up and he was up like this at this angle, and somebody tried to turn, and I realized they weren't going to make it because my nose was sticking out too far. I put it in R and backed right into this poor kid and didn't even know he was there. And look, by the way, I looked and I couldn't see him.
Because your pickup was so big and sticking up in the air.
The angle, of course, screwed everything up, too. But so, yeah. And it never crossed my mind that I might have damaged my truck. I mean, it's got a great big bumper on the back, and sticking out real good is the tailgate, or the hitch for my trailer. I'm going to have to go get on the plane now, Chuck. So when you hear me waving, I'll wave out the window.
Will we be able to pick that up?
I think so.
Thank you, Baxter, for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Baxter Black. Cowboy humorist and poet. What a guy. But next week, we'll have more of Baxter Black. Most of today's interview was taped in his hotel room last Sunday, but I kept the tape recorder with me as he was checking out of the hotel and his arrival at the Huron Airport Terminal. These outtakes will be next week's show, so please be with us next Saturday morning as we hear Baxter Black simply going up to complete strangers and joking with them. The first one is the maid on the third floor of the Crossroads Hotel, as he tells her he just stole three wonderful towels out of his bathroom. But then later, Baxter complains to the airport people that all those towels he stole from the hotel made his baggage overweight. As you can tell, I certainly enjoyed Baxter as a guest on the show. He performed brilliantly at the packed house of the Huron Crossroads Convention Center Ballroom last Saturday, and for the hundreds of people who had the chance to see him, he gave us an hour and a half show of laughter that we will never forget. Our thanks goes to KOKK for bringing him to town, and maybe they will bring another celebrity to Huron in the future for us to see live on the stage. My time is up for today. We were really glad to have you with us as a listener, and as always, thanks for letting us be part of your morning's entertainment. I just looked at the calendar hanging on the studio wall, and it doesn't seem possible, but on the 29th of March, our radio talk show will be in its third year, broadcasting to all you wonderful people in South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska. Thanks for supporting the show, folks. Don't forget, next week, we'll have more from Baxter Black as we listen to the outtakes from our interview with him last Sunday. Broadcasting from here in South Dakota, this is Chuck Anderson saying have a safe and successful week.